should be a damn sight better than the old one.
Hi there, my name is Sophie B. Hawkins, and I'm going to be reading an original writing for This Way Out, Not Beating Around the Bush. And then I'm going to read Mrs. Dalloway, a little part from it.
Broadway's Anthony Wang took our global queer read-in on the train to Brooklyn.
Excerpts from Chapter 4, Men of the House, by James Earl Hardy.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine. I'm Lucia Chappell. Our news wrap crew is off for the holidays, but they'll be back next week with some of the news in or affecting LGBTQ communities around the world. On this week's special show, we're greeting the new year with a pair of selections from the Marathon Global Queer Read-In we presented online last June. Pieces read by Sophie B. Hawkins and Anthony Wayne that speak to the theme of coming out and making it real. Multi-talented, Grammy-nominated singer-songwriter Sophie B. Hawkins joined our global queer read-in with an original piece about how her mother's coming out in print helped her make it real, with help from Virginia Woolf.
Hi there, my name is Sophie B. Hawkins, and I'm going to be reading an original writing for This Way Out, and then I'm going to read Mrs. Dalloway, a little part from it. Because this is called Not Beating Around the Bush. My mother's book represented a time when I hoped she would leave my father for her female lover, when I empathized more with her breakaway than his need for her. That would have made me feel guilty, because I had an equal and opposite need to take care of my father, rejected as he was by my mother. The book meant herself, the work she had been doing doggedly for incalculable years. Fueled by pain, humbled by self-discovery, the pages were seared like moth wings by fame's fire. Underwater was published in 1974. I knew the day it was going to happen. Eating peanut butter and jelly in front of Lost in Space, I knew, even before she got to the door, that she would burst in and say, "They're publishing my book." It was the happiest day of my childhood life. I had watched my mother open envelopes from publishing houses for years, cry over rejections, bellow in hungover rants at the kitchen table, and rip the New York Times in a jealous rage about the best-selling author. And then I watched her go to work for 5 hours every day. She was answerable to no one, certainly not one of her children. But I understood without question why. Soon came the time she wanted me to read it, that craving she had for recognition. I was too young, though the correct age to groom a child to be your champion is never. The love scenes were ribald, raw, realistic. I was disgusted. I wasn't yet in puberty, and I did know more about sex than I should have, but the positions of my mother's female characters assaulted the friendships I imagined were her own love affairs. I had a romantic vision of love between women that was not at all pornographic. I was just too young. I never wanted to be a lesbian like the ones in her book. I never wanted to be a lesbian. 10 years later, 10 lifetimes in a child's existence, I opened those shocking pages. Was I now willing to associate being with a woman as a privilege rather than a sentence? Or was I high on the freedom of not looking for approval from the man who had the power to destroy me? Maybe going to my mother's book as a how-to for lesbian sex when Michelle finally got me to bed at age 20 was just going straight to it, straight to the source, not beating around the bush. Michelle approached me at the bar on 125th Street and Broadway, Having watched my set with the Pink Men, a trio in which I played drums, I felt at once, she recognizes me, and she's mistaken. I had just left a 6-year relationship with my drum teacher. I was a percussion major at the Manhattan School of Music, and I was writing songs that I sang from behind my orange drum set. "We're giving her singing lessons," Del Pedro, the band leader, would toot as he introduced me. I was relieved, actually, that he set the bar so low. I didn't intend to be a singer, and I believed my songs could carry me, regardless of my voice. "I like your songs," Michelle said, "a tall tree and me, a blade of grass." I bowed my head in the shadow of her magnificent branches. I would have to tell her I don't have time to talk, not because she was so intimidating, but because I had relinquished small talk when I was 14, reading Virginia Woolf. And I realized I had to become an artist, and my path was music. At that age, I threw my voluminous eggs into the basket of African drums and the man who had become my teacher. Now I had left him on his knees, which felt like tearing half my body off, ripping my soul in two. I had thought I'd love him and only him until I died. I couldn't imagine parting from this man, and when I did, it's because I was dying. I had grown as much as I could grow, and I was withering in that soil. I had taken all I could take, given all I could give, become all I wanted to become under his wing, a jazz vibraphonist, an African drummer, a classical percussion student, a child woman, and a gray ghost. I looked in his mirror and saw a dead girl who existed only in notes and strokes. I had lost my wind. My throat had collapsed. I fled. Michelle sat down. "Really, your songs are great," she said. "She thinks I like women because I play the drums." I thought, I have to tell her I don't. And I have to get back on stage behind my drum set. She told me she was an English lit major at Barnard, dexterously inveigling herself into my mind as the writer from Boston. She got my number. I knew she was gay, or pretending to be. I knew she liked my pink sweatpants, my t-shirt, my independence. I knew she'd call, but I hoped she wouldn't. Relentlessly, she called. I took a walk with her in Central Park, found out she loved Whitney Houston, had lots of friends her age, took her sanity for granted, couldn't listen to anything over a minute and a half, and wanted to hold my hand. I wouldn't let her. I wasn't sure I liked her. She was so young, 18, and so full of herself, or the idea of herself, which was impressive, though not compelling. She did have amazing eyes, brown stones that squinted at the horizon, glistening beneath a receding ocean wave. But she wasn't funny. "I'm not a lesbian," I told her over the phone. It was true, I had never been with a woman, and the thought of being with a woman brought back a rash of humiliating images from my mother's book. Those tortured characters, or was it my mother? Shame, guilt, but also courage, exploration, excruciating vulnerability. "Nope, I'm not a lesbian," I said. As I hung up the phone, I heard a faint, "I love you." "What? Did she say she loved me? Hold on, did she mean that? Did she even say it?" I had already hung up. I sat in the hallway between rooms wrapped in a red phone cord. I was between times, between lives. Did a woman just say she loved me? It was gone. I heard the faint echo of her voice, which I realized I hadn't recorded in my mind until now. I rejected her. And I was lost. Michelle sat next to me on the couch, telling me she was leaving for Paris to model. What a relief she'll be gone, I thought. I've come this far, but the road is closed, and I can return to my drums and my songs and my cozy release from the ancient lover who robbed 6 years of my childhood. Suddenly, she pushed me down my back. I felt two soft boobs on mine. What the hell was going on? Her languid torso and limbs completely covered me without trapping me. Hot springs on a cool night. She knew how good she felt as her whole being articulated something so profoundly deep for a female. Love this. her gene pool said, enjoy this. Two boobs on mine, soft and alive, a sensual pressing into me, exploring but no focus on a penis, rather a spread out stimulation. All cells had taste buds, no end, no beginning, an environment of luxurious lasting. Like swimming in water from another planet. I was bathing in pleasure. I don't remember her kissing me, and probably that's because I wouldn't go that far. Kissing is for love. By the time I opened my mother's book for research on the edge of the bed, we were both unsure and terrified. Or perhaps she had become squeamish, as I had when I was a child. She left for Paris. I remember thinking I was going to write really great songs now. A lock had been broken. I wanted to know how I really felt, beyond need, beyond striving. At 20 years old, I realized that gender is a tool, and if you throw out the manual, it can be used to make so many experiences and connections. My African drum teacher was a man, a much older man, but he was also the mother I was looking for at times. Michelle was a teenage boy, in her way, playing at everything, intending no harm. The perfect person doesn't exist, except in fantasy. And on TV, Gentleman Jack comes to mind. The creation of over two centuries' work and three brilliant women, Ann Lister, Sally Wainwright, and Saran Jones. Not to mention the women behind the women, Helena Whitbread et al. The work never ends. The love never ends. It just gets deeper. At 14, sitting on a rock in Riverside Park, reading To the Lighthouse, Virginia Woolf inveigled herself into my destiny. I coined the word omnisexual in a 1992 article in the New York Times while describing my sexuality to John Pareles because he asked. Your gender doesn't define my sexuality, I explained. We are creative beings, and I reserve the right to evolve my whole life. Love the person, explore the gender. Love the gender, explore the person. Years later, Nicole Kidman used the word omnisexual to describe Virginia Woolf while shooting Michael Cunningham's The Hours, based on Mrs. Dalloway. My brilliant, tortured mother created me, and beautiful, benign Michelle freed me from my mother's shame. Now, I'd like to read a passage from Mrs. Dalloway by Virginia Woolf, because, damn, I wish I was her lover. Yet, she could not resist sometimes yielding to the charm of a woman, not a girl, of a woman confessing, as to her they often did, some scrape, some folly. And whether it was pity, whether beauty, or that she was older, or some accident like a faint scent, or a violin next door, so strange is the power of sounds at certain moments. She did undoubtedly feel what men felt, only for a moment, but it was enough. It was a sudden revelation, a tinge like a blush, which one tried to check, and then, as it spread, one yielded to its expansion and rushed to the farthest verge and there quivered and felt the world come closer, swollen with some astonishing significance, some pressure of rapture, which split its skin and gushed and poured with an extraordinary alleviation over the cracks and sores. Then, for that moment, she had seen an illumination, a match burning in a crocus, an inner meaning almost expressed. But the clothes withdrew. The heart softened. It was over. The moment. I'm Sophie B. Hawkins for This Way Out.
We'll hear from another Global Queer Read-In performer after this.
Hi, this is Greg Louganis.
I'm Margaret Cho.
This is Edmund White.
Hi, I'm Kate Quinton.
Hello, I'm Armistead Maupin.
I'm Clive Barker.
This is Judy Shepherd.
Hello, this is Ian McKellen.
I'm Joey Jewell.
I'm Stephen Fry.
I'm Harvey Milk.
Hi, this is Janice Ian.
My name's Robbie Rogers.
This is Essex Hemphill.
I'm Ellen DeGeneres.
I'm Tab Hunter.
I'm Billy Bean.
This is John Cameron Mitchell.
Hello, I'm Bruce Valanche.
This is Bishop Gene Robinson.
I'm Reverend Troy Perry.
I'm Robbie Kaplan.
I'm Andrew Sullivan.
This is Augustine Burroughs.
I'm Barney Frank.
I'm Cleve Jones.
My name is Kate Kendall.
I'm Dan Savage.
Hi, I'm Daryl Stevens, and you've discovered
This Way Out.
This Way Out.
This Way Out.
The international radio show for all our sexually diverse communities.
How dare they?
And those who love them.
You ain't gonna get this nowhere else.
And that's the truth.
So much cooler online.
There's nothing cooler than the world's only international LGBT radio magazine.
Unless it's thiswayout.org.
At thiswayout.org, you'll find program information,
related videos,
expanded features,
news wrap transcripts,
and CDs and downloadable material.
It might not be cooler than radio,
but there's much more This Way Out at thiswayout.org.
Give them the truth so they approach the situation with ammunition. I keep nothing the way they hear everything because they know how to listen. Teach them the game so they know their position, so they can grow and make decisions that change the world and break old traditions. I do it for the seeds, y'all.
Broadway's Anthony Wang took our global queer read in on the train to Brooklyn with a story about being out and making it real in a remodeled family.
Excerpts from Chapter 4, Men of the House by James Earl Hardy. Uncle Mitch is singing again. Not that low hum he does while reading. Not that Trace harmonizing whenever a Randy Crawford tune is playing. Full body, full scale, full blown, and full hearted singing. And why wouldn't he be when the reason for the song has returned? I've been loving his voice ever since Dad introduced us. That first day, while we were riding in Uncle Angel's car to Queens Plaza, he treated us to Layla Hathaway's Smile. Dad turned down the volume so we could just hear him. Even then, it was obvious, while he was singing the song for me, he was singing it to him. It made us all smile, on the inside too. I'd never seen Dad smile like that about anything or anyone. I'd never seen him be so free with anyone else, which made it easy for me to be free with Uncle Mitch too. But when Dad left the picture, the music stopped. Literally. The old melodies filled the house as Uncle Mitch was twisting Meyer Destiny's hair, fixing dinner, tending the garden, or taking a shower. If he sang at all, it was with or for Destiny to assist in her vocalizing. He no longer did it because he wanted to, because it brought him joy, because it made him and those around him feel better than good. The day after the blackout of 03 was when I knew that Uncle Mitch was back. Dad was trapped in Brooklyn and had to stay the night with Uncle Mitch. When I spoke to them that morning, I could hear the music in Uncle Mitch's voice. There was a joy that had been missing for years. And when he and Dad drove to Philly to pick me up, I was visiting Temple U's campus. He was singing to Jill Scott's A Long Walk. Let's take a long walk around the park after dark. And now the soundtrack has changed from It Hurts Like Hell by Aretha, Not Gonna Cry by Mary J, and Living All Alone by Phyllis, and return to Same Old Love by Anita, You Give Good Love by Whitney, and I Feel Good All Over by Stephanie. Which is why I was surprised when he wanted to have that talk with Destiny. Not the talk. Dad has had several of those with me. The first one when I was 7. His exact words were, if you lost or need help and you see a cop, go in the other direction. They've never been a black man's friend. But that talk. I couldn't help Uncle Mitch in that department since he and Dad never had that talk with me. While he hid from who he was, from mom, my grandmas, and the rest of our family, he lived an open life with Uncle Mitch and I. But I never saw it as him being ashamed of himself or Uncle Mitch. This was one special side of himself, one special part of his life that he only chose to share with me. And that made me feel special. I believe Destiny, Mitch's daughter, could tell they were living it too. She could clearly see and hear, just as I had at her age, that her father loved and was in love with this man she called Uncle. That they were simpatico. But Uncle Mitch still felt it was important to articulate our familia situation. So there was no confusion and requested I sit in. I guess for moral support. So, Sugar Plum, how do you feel if Uncle Raheem moved in with us? You mean lived here?
Yes.
Oh, Judy, I would love it.
Would you?
Why? Because he's my favorite uncle. And then Errol would have his daddy in the house too. And we'd be even Stevens.
We all laughed. Well, this moving in will mean much more than that.
What do you mean, Daddy?
You know how Grandma and Grandpa love each other?
Uh-huh.
Uncle Raheem and I love each other the same way. She considered.
You mean you and Uncle Raheem would be a loving couple like Grandma and Grandpa?
That observation hit Uncle Mitch. He stumbled in his response. Yes.
Oh, Judy!
I nodded in agreement and appreciation.
After seeing a movie, Errol, his father, and Errol's two best friends, Ro and Sid, head back to the Crawford River's home with Chinese food. It is there that the ever curious Ro finally gets the chance to interrogate the elder, Raheem.
Mr. R.
Yeah?
Can I ask you something?
Sure.
You're bisexual.
I guess you could say that.
You're not sure?
No, I don't really like the label, but I'm attracted to both men and women.
Are you bi-curious?
Bi-curious?
Yeah, I heard about it on that MTV show Undress.
No, I'm not curious about men or women. That would mean I'm just experimenting, trying something new. And I know that they both made me hot. The quartet laughed it up.
You saw that Spike Lee movie, Get on the Bus?
Yeah.
Like those two brothers in it? You and Mrs. C are together, right?
Yeah.
So who's the man?
The man?
Yeah.
We're both men.
I know, but like, with a man and a woman, the man is the head, the leader, the breadwinner of the family. So how does that work with two men?
There can be more than one head, one leader, one breadwinner. Even in a home where there's a man and a woman. But I take it it's not like that in yours.
No.
That's okay. But every family doesn't operate like that. I do the cooking, cleaning, shopping. I am the homemaker. I guess to people who think there could only be one head of the house, that makes me the woman. Sid and I chuckled. I used to think like that. There was only one way for a man to be, one way for a woman to be. And only one way for straight people to be and another for gay people.
Is that when you were a homo thug?
Dad coughed in his drink. Man, you got my entire personal file.
Who are you, the FBI?
Quartet laughter. Yeah. I guess that's what I was. Like, a decade ago. Being a thug was, well, what I thought being a man was all about. The Tims, the low-hanging jeans, the fitted caps, I was wrong. It's not about what you wear, how you talk, how you walk. If I still thought like that, I probably wouldn't be with the love of my life today. He never said it out loud before, but I've always felt that that is exactly who Uncle Mitch is. Roe was silent, but I knew he wasn't finished yet. After about a minute, you see the episode of Rock where Andrew's brother comes out as gay and marries a white man? Yeah. Would you and Mr. C ever get married? I don't know. We haven't talked about it, and I've never really, really thought about it. And it isn't legal in New York, but if it was, and we did, would you come to the wedding? That caught Ro off guard. I guess so. That's good to know. I'm sure my son would love to share a special day like that with his friends. His best friends. Sid and I nodded. You can order Men of the House, the novel that started all B-Boy Blues, and the other B-Boy series titles at Amazon.com. Or just reach out to Mr. Hardy for personally autographed copies on Facebook and IG, james.e.hardy.9, Twitter at James Earl Hardy, and at jamesearlhardy@gmail.com. Men of the House, this has been Anthony Wayne for This Way Out Radio.
Thanks for discovering This Way Out, brought to you by the nonprofit Overnight Productions. The Global Queer Read-In was produced by Brian DeShazer with Rebecca Drapkin. Thanks again to Sophie B. Hawkins and Anthony Wayne. You can see videos of all the participants on our This Way Out radio channel on YouTube. Sophie B. Hawkins and Talib Kweli performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation, the Yavanna Foundation, a bequest from Christopher David Trentum and John Beaupre, and Richard Merck and Brad Payton of Silicon Valley. Listener donors make this program possible. Look for This Way Out Radio on social media, and don't miss our 2020 Queer Year in Review now at thiswayout.org. Email us at tworadio@aol.com or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078, USA. For coordinating producer Greg Gordon and the entire This Way Out crew, I'm Lucia Chappelle. Thanks for listening online at thiswayout.org or wherever you get your podcasts, and on a growing number of local community radio stations and online outlets around the world, including radio-wiz.com, Manila, the Philippines, Global Community Radio, GRC1, Geneva, New York, 2MTM, Kunambal, New South Wales, and this one. Stay safe, stay healthy, and in a happier new year, stay tuned.